Journalists spend a lot of time thinking about and rethinking about the service we provide around election time. In this election season, so much is different around the process and the circumstances. So how should the news media be preparing to cover the next week or so? You can join in at 800-642-1234. How are you looking at this election differently this year? Did you vote using a different method than you normally do? Are you consuming news differently than in previous election seasons? And what are you hoping to hear next Tuesday from the media as voting goes on in person, as results start to come in? What are you worried about? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Garrett M. Graff is Director of Cyber Initiatives for the Aspen Institute's Media and Technology Program, Aspen Digital. He's former editor of the Washingtonian Magazine and Politico Magazine, and he co-wrote a piece for the Columbia Journalism Review, along with Vivian Schiller, looking at election coverage. Garrett, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, one big lesson that I'm hearing a lot of people talk about, and you wrote about it, is, I think, the value of patience for all of us on election day and not being too eager to, quote unquote, call states as they go along. How important is that?
Yeah, this is going to be an unprecedented election in American history, let alone modern American history. Almost every single person in the country will be voting differently than they do before, either through the mail, through absentee ballots, or through the procedures and different polling places that have been set up because of the pandemic. And what that really means is that we can't expect the same level of results on election night that we are used to. And it's really important that the media and voters sort of understand that, expect that, and understand the role of the media in those first hours after the election. Because one of the things is, you know, we have gotten very used to results on election night being complete enough or comprehensive enough that they can be determinative. That news organizations are able to predict how many ballots are still to be counted, and they're able to project a winner. And even that language is really important. You know, the media has no official role in counting elections. And so any numbers you're getting from the news media on election night or even election week next week are going to be unofficial, and they will be subject to change as the week goes on and as further votes get tallied. And in a totally normal election, an election that's not in the middle of the pandemic, an election where there is no fraud or malfeasance, results change and trickle in over the course of the week as ballots are counted, recounted, as absentee totals are added, as military ballots are totaled. In 2016, we saw 16 million votes come in after Donald Trump had been declared or projected as the winner of the election, and that's normal, and that people should expect that. And so they should expect that election results will change throughout next week. And none of that is actually a sign of fraud. That's the sign of the system working as expected and as intended to provide a careful and accurate vote count.
And you, one statement that you write in your piece that we mentioned is know your calendar. And I'm looking at a key part of the calendar. This, Tuesday is November 3rd. The official vote is certified. The official result in Wisconsin, anyway, is certified December 1st. So that gives a lot of time to count. And the notion that all the counting's done on election night, not even close to true based on that calendar.
Not even close to true. And in fact, that's why those state certification dates are set so far down the road. And it's really important that people not leap to the idea that, you know, if we don't know election results by midnight Tuesday or Wednesday morning, that they are late. There really isn't any such thing as late results in the election. It just sometimes might take a couple of days, a couple of weeks. And that's going to be particularly true in jurisdictions that are dealing with much larger absentee or vote by mail counts than they are used to.
Talking to Garrett Graff from the Aspen Institute, talking about a piece he co-wrote for Columbia Journalism Review, looking at media coverage of the election and what happens on election night and the days and maybe weeks afterward. You can join in with your questions and thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. So some other possible scenarios to think about, Garrett, if one candidate or the other makes an early claim of victory before we have those kind of enough results to effectively project a winner. How can the media handle something like that?
Yeah, and this is actually, I think, one of the looming problems for next week is candidates effectively declaring premature or false claims of victory to set the narrative that changing election results are the election being stolen from them, whereas that's simply not going to be the case next week. You know, the Tuesday night results are not going to be determinative. It's going to take many states in the country through Thursday or even Friday to even figure out how many total ballots they have, let alone to figure out what how they are counted. And what that means is that in that uncertainty, there is going to be an incentive, really, for candidates to start trying to set a narrative that the election is being stolen from them. And it's important that voters not buy into that. It's important that the media not buy into that. And it's important that local and state officials do everything they can to discourage that and to underscore that the legitimacy of the election hinges on counting all of the votes.
Now, in every election, there are a lot of polling stations and jurisdictions. There are going to be some small localized problems. For that kind of thing, how can that be reported on without making it look like, you know, that's the norm?
Yeah, and this is where, you know, we forget just how many things go wrong during a normal election. You know, Americans will gather next week to vote in something like 230,000 places. And that means that even if 99.9% of all voting goes off totally fine without problem, there will still be literally hundreds of places where the power goes out, where someone forgets to plug in the voting machines, where an election official oversleeps and shows up late, where someone loses the voter roll. And that those are problems that happen totally normally. They're not necessarily evidence of fraud or misconduct. And those localized problems are not going to mean that the system writ large is unable to produce a legitimate decision about who the winner of the election is. And that's really important that the media not blow up localized problems to appear to be a systemic failure or to raise questions in the public's mind about a systemic failure. And that's going to be true sort of in part because, you know, for places that are voting in person next week, the socially distanced line is going to mean that, you know, even a relatively quick moving, well-staffed, well-resourced voting line might stretch for a couple of hundred yards. And the media is going to have to resist the urge to make it seem like, you know, every voting place in America is seeing literally lines out the door, when that's actually just a sign of the pandemic procedures in voting in this unprecedented circumstance.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Karen is with us in Madison. Karen, hi.
Hello. So here's my question. So if all of these votes don't have to even be counted by December 1st being the deadline, and all these votes that come in after that night, the Electoral College has already voted and already given their electorate to a certain candidate. How can that be fair?
Okay, that is inaccurate, actually.
Great question, and this is where it's really important to understand and know your calendar over the next 6 weeks. So the dates that you need to know are your state certification deadline, which means in Wisconsin, in early December, the state officials will determine the official certified results. That needs to happen in every state across the country by December 8th. And then on December 14th is when that Electoral College actually meets all across the country to cast their official ballots for the presidency. So literally, as long as a state has wrapped up its count by December 8th, everything will proceed as normal across the country. That gives plenty of time for all of these ballots to be counted, for disputes around the ballots to be hashed out in court or at local election boards. And there's plenty of time in this process for the calendar to unfold exactly as anticipated, leading to a legitimate vote by the Electoral College on December 14th. So, you know, don't worry that if you're looking at results, you know, that are still changing Thursday, Friday, Saturday of next week, votes are still being tallied. That does not mean in any way that that the legitimacy of the election is being compromised, and it doesn't mean in any way that the states will miss the Electoral College deadline, because that's not until the middle of December.
Karen, thanks a lot for calling in. Good question. Garrett Graff is with us from the Aspen Institute, looking at media coverage of the election as it continues and closes on Tuesday. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you look for from the media as the election gets closer? What do you want to hear? What do you want the media to be careful about on election night? And as we heard in the days after, as maybe vote tallies are or will be changing over time, call 800-642-1234. Or join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation now with the Aspen Institute's Garrett Graff, talking about how the news media can cover the last day of this year's election and what comes that night and in the weeks to follow. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions. Garrett, I've been steering clear of a term right now. Election Day, your colleague who co-wrote that piece has written another thing saying, you know, we're already having Election Day right now. Is it misleading to just call Tuesday Election Day anymore?
Yeah, and certainly that appears to be this case, and that I think we need to move towards thinking about this really as more election season, and that the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November isn't Election Day so much as it is the last day of election. Or the last day of voting, because what you're seeing this year is just this incredible record turnout by mail, in-person early voting, absentee balloting, and it looks quite likely that more than half of all the people who vote in this election will have already done so before next Tuesday. And that I think it is important for the media to make that clear. In part because every one of those votes is equally valid, and that there is, I think there is a tendency to think of people who vote on Election Day as somehow sort of having more valid votes than people who vote in other ways, when that's simply not the case. That's not the law, and it's certainly not the trend of early voting across the country. Even before this year, nearly a third of all Americans in 2016 who voted did so early.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Brad is with us in Madison. Brad, hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Brad?
My comment was just as Americans, we want what we want now, right? We want it when we want it now. And I think like the biggest thing that we need to focus on is a counter narrative. I think that when as the votes are being counted, every minute past November 3rd, on November 4th, that gives, if people believe that there's fraud, that the narrative in their heads will be, this just gives people time to commit more fraud. Whereas I think assurances that no fraud is being committed they're not going to believe it. So I would say that like the counter narrative, it needs to be just count all the votes. That's my comment.
Brad, thanks a lot for the call. Garrett?
Yeah, and I think, Brad, you're absolutely right that the we have this idea from, a century ago that the fact that votes have not been officially reported from a given precinct means that, this is some sort of Chicago-style shenanigans where, an entire cemetery is being stuffed into the ballot box once they figure out what the margin of victory that they need to overcome is. And the truth of the matter is that election fraud in modern elections is vanishingly small. There have been numerous studies, and they all show that fraud in American election, regardless of how it's carried out, whether it's by mail or in person, accounts for a few thousandths or tens of thousandths of a single percent of the vote. Washington State, for instance, found that in its most recent midterm election, Washington State, a state that conducts its entire election by mail, out of about 3.4 million votes, it had about 130 fraudulent votes, sort of about 0.0025% fraud, which is an incredibly small number. And in many ways, it's important that the media emphasize how both rare fraud actually is, and that even reports of problems actually generally point to their solutions. So one example of this is in Georgia this summer, there were 1,000 people who double voted in the summer primary in Georgia. But what most people sort of failed to understand when they heard that number is not only that those 1,000 voters represented just a tiny fraction of a percent of the total voters, but that the double votes were actually caught by the very mechanisms in place to prevent such instances. And as far as investigators have found, only one of those double voters was known to have malign intentions. So we have systems in place to prevent fraud. And when those systems report fraud, that's actually a sign that the system worked, not that the system failed.
What happens on election night and the day after as rumors are going around on social media? Maybe a candidate is questioning the legitimacy of an election. Probably malign actors are spreading misinformation about what's going on. How can the media keep up with that?
Yeah, and you mentioned sort of one thing that is important to talk about in this context that we haven't really talked about, which is the malign actors, foreign adversaries, domestic troublemakers, who might try to step into an information vacuum on election night with what people call a perception hack, which is trying to cast doubt on the legitimacy of the election. It is in many ways easier to pretend that you hacked the election than it is to actually hack the election. And so people should be especially wary of stories between now and the election or the period after the election where you have someone coming out and saying that they hacked the election and offering what could even look like very convincing proof without sort of understanding the context, because it is incredibly hard to actually execute these attacks. It is nearly impossible, given the decentralized nature of American elections, to hack or attack the U.S. election at scales, you know, enough to actually matter in a national election. And so, you know, you might very well see malign actors stepping out over the coming days to say, you know, hey, look, here's a video of me hacking a voting machine in Broward County, Florida. And that is more likely than not actually a fake. And that's actually precisely what the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI warned about last week, which was we saw Iran sending targeted emails pretending to be from the white nationalist group Proud Boys to voters in states like Alaska and Florida, saying, hey, we know you're a Democratic voter. You need to support Trump or else. And while it looked like that was the result of stealing voter information, that voter data is actually publicly available and easily available, and that there is no sign that Iran was actually able to penetrate voting systems in a meaningful way.
That's all the time we have. Garrett, thanks again for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Garrett M. Graff is Director of Cyber Initiatives for the Aspen Institute's Media and Technology Program, Aspen Digital. We talked with him today about a piece he co-wrote for the Columbia Journalism Review on media coverage as the election comes to an end.